Here we go.
Welcome to BP WrigleyCast, the Eagles podcast that will be accepting the qualifying offer for $17 million. So we'll be able to keep doing the podcast for another season for $17 million. I think Joel and Ryan that are joining me today will be okay with that. What do you think, guys?
It's a tough negotiation, but yes. I think in the end, I think it's probably worth it.
Yeah, 17.2 if we want to be exact.
The point two is going back to the fans. They deserve a part.
We owe it all to them. So. Yeah.
Wait, I thought the point two was Isaac's share.
That was 0.02 for him.
Isaac, if you disagree, go ahead and speak up.
No, go ahead, Isaac. It's fine. Oh, okay. No, that's cool. So today it's just going to be the three of us, Ryan, Joel, and myself. And we were just talking about this before. It's only been 2 weeks since we last did one of these, but it feels like it's been forever. And while there has been, the off season has already begun. There's plenty of things to talk about, and we'll get to those. We wanted to start off by just kind of going through closing out the postseason by reviewing some of our favorite moments of the postseason. So we'll go in order, kind of the order in which it happened, and we'll start with Joel's moment. Joel, without giving it away, do you want to give a little preface of what we're going to listen to here?
Well, I don't know how to talk about it without giving it away.
You're good. Come on.
Say this thing, but don't.
You're the 60 seconds of the former Cub guy. You can do it.
I will say that I was very nervous when the Cubs drew the San Francisco Giants in the first round because I thought that was going to be their toughest matchup. Because they have Bumgarner and Cueto and a smart manager and a smart bunch of guys on that team who just really kind of know how to hang around and keep drawing pitches and drawing walks and slap the ball around. And, you know, I know that they had a rough second half, one of the worst second halves in baseball, but they still made me nervous. And so then when the Cubs were up 2-1, I felt pretty good, but then they were down in game four, and I thought they're going to lose this game and they're going to go back to Chicago and they're going to face Johnny Cueto, who really had their number. And
all right, that's enough.
Super optimistic, as is my wont. And then the Cubs made some things happen, and that's when Wilson Contreras came to the plate in the top of the ninth. Sorry, Ryan, go on. What are you going to say? No.
I feel like you've narrowed this down to the point where I can guess.
Was it when David Ross put that sacrifice bunt down? Because that was good.
Yeah, that was great. So I don't know. How should I describe it? This is Wilson Contreras' single to tie up the game in the top of the ninth because I didn't think it was going to happen. And then he hit it, and it was tied. And then you kind of knew they were going to win at that point, didn't you?
All right, let's give it a quick listen.
Contreras in shitting. Contreras hits a ground ball up the middle. That's going to be a base hit. A two-run single by Wilson Contreras. The ball game is tied at 5.
All right, there we go.
Yep, that was awesome. And you know, once that inning got going, there was just single after single, and then Zobrist hit the double and Baez hit the single to score Hayward. And, you know, Hayward reached on that, you know, that was a bad bunt, but then he reached because he got to second because they threw it away. The shortstop threw it away. And then they won the game. And you went from thinking, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen the before and after Theo watching it, you know, he's got this very tight, unhappy grimace. And they do, that's the before, and the after is him like chugging a bottle of champagne in the clubhouse. So, and he said that he thought that game was lost. So to me, that was where everything kind of turned around, was Contreras' single.
I like the vigorous chest pounding that he did running up to the first base. That was good.
Yeah. You could also say Zobrist's double was a key moment in that inning too, but I went with the hit that actually tied it. Ryan,
is it my turn?
Is it, Carlos?
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Well, I'm going to do a little bit better of being, you know, concealing of what what my moment was, but I will say it was the very next game that the Cubs played. It was at Wrigley Field, and the Dodgers went down early, but they came back and tied it. But the Cubs just never quit.
All right, here we go.
Here comes the 0-2.
Boom.
So yeah, there's a reason that is my favorite moment, and it has a lot to do with the fact that I was there for that game, and it was just so unexpected. I mean, the Cubs had gone ahead, and then they lost the lead, and they were tied 3-3, and they loaded the bases, but there were two outs, and Miguel Montero was up, and it was an 0-2 pitch, and it just didn't seem at all likely to happen.
Especially on 0-2.
Yeah, especially on 0-2, you would think that, you know, he's burying a slider in the dirt or something. Or maybe throwing, well, you know, Joe Blanton doesn't really have a fastball, but it just didn't seem like the kind of thing. You were hoping that, you know, Montero would hit a blooper or one of those little singles the other way that he's kind of good at. So, yeah, the grand slam, that just did not... I did not see that happening. When it happened, I was shooting a little video of it. I think I talked about that before. And all I saw was the ball go out of the park and then beer just all over me. I got a beer shower, and that was an amazing feeling. You went from worried and wondering if they were going to be down 0-1 heading into two games against Clayton Kershaw and Rich Hill to up 7-3 in that game, and it was, yeah, I didn't even see the Dexter Fowler home run afterwards because it was
it didn't matter.
I was still, yeah, I was still just completely rocked by what had happened.
Well, my moment, I know when I told you guys what it was on Slack, there seemed to be a little bit of a surprise in that, but I'll explain it a little bit in that it broke me momentarily. It nearly broke me and took completely, speaking of like being surprised, like this was the ultimate, not just surprise, but shock and bewilderment. And I was literally having an out of body experience while this was happening. And if at the end of the day, it would have gone against the Cubs, this would be the play that would haunt me, for the rest of my life. So let's listen in. So that play to this day, I'll just randomly bring it up and watch it. And I know Joel refuses to see it. I don't know if you've seen it yet, Joel? I know you've been blocking it out.
I haven't watched it. I mean, I think it's, well, go on. And then I want to tell you my funny reaction to that, but I have not watched it, and I do not want to ever see it again in my life. I'm just going to forget that it ever happened.
I watch it often and I think I'm almost with you in it because it could have just been such a devastating thing for fans, for the history of the team. If they would have lost game 7, that play would have just gone down in history with, you know, Bill Buckner going between the legs, all that stuff. But it didn't. And so when that happened, I was like, oh my God, this is Cubs. This is happening. This means we're not going to win this game.
Right.
And when they did, it was like, oh, okay. That moment where we went to the abyss was just a brief little preview of hell. And then it was like, okay, now you're back up.
You know, it's funny you say that because I'm thinking of this in a new way because of what you just said. And it would have been, and it's funny because when I was sitting next to my buddy Scott in game 7, and I think that Ryan, you know this, but the listeners may not, Carlos and I were there. I guess we talked about it. We were there. When Madden pulled Hendricks and put in Lester, I was like, I don't like this. And he's like, it's going to be okay. And then there's a wild pitch and two runs scored. And I go, that is so Cubs. And he said, I mean, how many times in your life have you seen two runs score in a wild pitch? I can't think of 3. So there it is in game 7. And then when Davis hit the home run, I thought, oh my God, I thought we were beyond this. I thought we had put this all behind us and you know, we had, but now we're succumbing to this same tired narrative and we're going to blow it again. But so this is the ultimate subversion of that narrative, which is not a way that I'd looked at it before, but it's like, yeah, you think you're those Cubs, those, you know, the Bartman and the Leon Durham ball through the, you know, right through the wickets, but no, you're not. And they're going to professionally score 2 solid runs and win it. So that's an interesting little turnabout that I hadn't considered before.
You know, if I had to have guessed somebody to pick their favorite moment as the home run, I would have guessed it'd be Joel, just because he enjoys the pain. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that because of the way it all went down, it was probably the most painful moment of my Cubs fandom. Just because it was so fatalistic. It was game 7. I mean, the 8th inning of game 6 of the 2003 NLCS, there was an entire game that they could play after that. So, you know, it was painful, but it was still like, okay, well, they could still win the next game. But there was no next game. Like, Davis hits the home run in the 8th inning, and it's all of a sudden just doom. Absolute doom.
So awful.
But to tell a brief story, I have this game DVR'd, as I'm sure a lot of people do. And my cable provider is sending me an upgrade new box, which actually is going to cost me less money, so I had to do it. And I'm going to lose everything on my DVR. And that's it. That appointment is tomorrow.
There's no way to transfer it?
I don't know. I would assume not. They didn't say that specifically. I'm just going on the assumption I'm losing everything on my DVR because it's a completely new box. So what I decided to do was tonight during dinner, I fast forwarded until the 8th inning, and then I watched from that point forward. And I watched the Davis home run, and I watched the reaction of Indians fans, and it just didn't bother me. There was nothing. It was no... It was just, it's a part of the story.
We have power over that moment now.
Yeah, it's just a part of the story. And that's, you know, it's like Red Sox fans, if they went back and watched highlights of the 2004 ALCS, they would still enjoy the Red Sox losing highlights of the first 3 games because that's part of the story. That's what makes the story great. If they had gone out and swept the Yankees for 4 games, I don't think they would have enjoyed that story in retrospect as much. So if the Cubs hold on to their 6-3 lead and just win, I don't know that we enjoyed that game and that story as much. So yeah, I like the Davis home run as much as it burned me at the moment and probably took like a couple years off my life. That's a big part of the story of the Cubs winning.
And also, it's interesting that you, Ryan, and I also, we picked plays of games that we were at. And that's another thing, right? It's when you're there and it's happening and you're in person, like it's such a visceral thing that it makes sense that we would pick plays, you know, of games that we were there. And Joel is just like the anomaly.
That's all good stuff you guys are saying, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate Ryan's point about how
we
get more out of it. But I didn't, you know, when they were winning 5-1, I thought this is in the bag, and I was like,
oh, I think we all did. I mean,
I was completely cool with that. I thought, hey, there's not going to be any drama, and that's great, you know. And then and then Madden started, like, he became you know, Jim Essien all of a sudden and started making the worst moves I've ever seen. But yeah, no, that's I think I was so freaked out by that homer that I still, even thinking about it after it happened, I was like borderline catatonic, you know. I was just like, I can't even. So, but yeah, I'll have to go back. And, you know, it's funny when you, Carlos, you said you've gone back and watched that play again and again. I've gone back and watched the ninth inning of game four of the NLDS again and again. Because it's like, you know, Zobrist double right into the corner there. And after Rizzo and Bryant get on, like that's what I watch. So it's interesting. It's I'll have to go back and watch that the ninth and tenth inning. But you know, actually that also, when I was thinking about my favorite plays, something that came to mind, it was probably too minor, but Al Mora tagging on the on Bryant's fly out there in the top of the tenth. That was a really great play and really underrated. And when Madden pulled Schwarber to put in Al Mora as a pinch runner, I thought that's a bad move because you're losing Schwarber's bat. But it ended up being a huge play because of because Al Mora took second, and then they walked Rizzo to get to Zobrist. So that's kind of set it all in motion, him tagging up on that fly out to center by Bryant.
You want one more quick point, and then we can kind of move on from this because I think we're starting to rehash things we've already talked about. But I do understand where you're coming from, Joel, in kind of your retort to what I had said. And I think as fans of the Cubs, it was difficult for us to appreciate in the moment what that game was. I've had people who are fans of different teams come to me and say, that was one of the best games I have ever seen. That is in the top echelon of baseball games. Like, as far as baseball drama goes, the Cubs and the Indians game 7 of the World Series, you know, going to extra innings with the short rain delay and the big comeback. I mean, that is baseball drama at its finest. And I think maybe because we had a dog in the fight, it's just a little bit harder to appreciate that. But I think as we go forward, we'll look back on it as not just the moment where the Cubs finally won, but also as one of the greatest series and one of the greatest games in baseball history.
That's a good point. And I think as we get more distance from it all, we'll have kind of a different perspective and we'll be wanting to revisit a lot of these plays. But I did want to say we're going to put all the links to these videos in the show notes. So if you want to go check them out, you can do that. And with that, let's move into the future and kind of the moves that Cubs are going to have to make getting prepared for 2017. I want to talk about some of the players that we pretty much know the Cubs are not going to bring back. We've got Jason Hamill, Dexter Fowler, Aroldis Chapman. And I want to start with Jason Hamill because I know, Ryan, it was either you or Isaac, you guys both had this idea, and one of you mentioned it in one of our podcasts that this idea of, well, what's going to happen with Jason Hamill? Oh, well, they'll exercise the option and trade him, which seemed like a very shrewd move when you brought it up. And I hadn't heard that before. I was like, ooh, that's very clever. And granted, you know, now we know that that's not going to happen. They didn't exercise the option. That gave him a chance to kind of go into free agency. I want to hear your thoughts, Ryan, because in my opinion, that seemed like very good karma for the Cubs to not just be like, you know, ruthless about that option. Not that good karma gets you anything, you know, right away, but perhaps in the long term. So I'm curious to hear what you thought about that Hamill move.
Well, yeah, you were right. It was me. And I patted myself on the back until I nearly sprained my shoulder about my thoughts on Hamill from the early part of the season. I thought that there was no way, because of the pitching market the way it was, and because his option was so friendly for what he gives you, I thought there was no way he could be with the team this year. I thought either they decline the option because he's so terrible they don't want him back, or they pick up the option and trade him because with the pitching market the way it is, they knew that they could get a haul for a guy who, you know, if he were on the market, would be one of the top 3 or 4 pitchers. Now, I hadn't considered the idea that maybe they had made a handshake agreement with him on that option. And I guess that's what had happened, was when the Cubs came up with that team option with the, you know, the vesting parts where it could have become guaranteed if you met certain, you know, notes. I hadn't considered that maybe they had made a handshake agreement where they said, you know, if we pick up the option, it's because you will be with the team. We're not going to pick it up and then trade you. Apparently it went as far as they even met with him and came to an agreement about whether they would pick up the option mm-hmm. or not. And Hamill asked them to decline it so that he could go to free agency, which I think will work out for him very well financially. As far as what you said about karma, I think it goes further than that. I think it's not only good karma, but I think players see that. Mm-hmm. They see that here's a team that's treating its players well, that you know is rewarding the fact that Jason Hamill was loyal to them. He signed with them originally, and they traded him at midseason with his wife about to give birth to a baby. And when he came back, there was a whole lot of loyalty for him mm-hmm. to come back to an organization that had dealt him, even though they left on good terms. So I think there's a lot wrapped into that move with Hamill. That I think it makes a lot of sense. It's good for Jason Hamill. He's going to get paid somewhere and go probably be bad, which is unfortunate, but he's going to be 33 or 34 years old next year.
Yeah.
He's already shown some pretty heavy signs of decline. He's going to go somewhere and make a lot of money. And I'm just glad it's not with the Cubs. I think they made the right move to go towards some younger pitchers.
And I want to hear your thoughts, Joel, and also kind of, I mean, we know Montgomery's in the mix for the rotation, but any other players that we think might, be in consideration for that rotation spot now?
Yeah, I haven't looked at who's available. I know the free agent market is pretty thin, and I know that they don't have a lot coming up through the pipeline. That's been one of the criticisms, one of the few criticisms of the Epstein Hoyer regime is that the minor league pitching has been, hasn't exactly been full of aces. But it's funny because when they declined the option and let Hamill go to free agency, I was pretty shocked. And I thought, I knew that there was the option of, picking up the option and trading him, or I thought, why not just keep him? Because it's a fairly affordable, I don't know what the numbers are, but I think it's a pretty affordable contract, and he's, a solid number five, and he gave you some good games, and why not just keep him? And then, Ryan, you wrote an article about that, and you wrote, here are his numbers if you really dive into them, and they made him look pretty mediocre. I'm like, hey, you know what? Not so bad that he's gone. But I know that, I guess if we want to touch on this, Ryan, you wrote about trading Jake Arrieta, which is, something they might have done a couple years ago to get some value of him before they have to really throw down after his contract is up. But with Hamill gone, I'm pretty comfortable with Montgomery in that role. But if we are going to talk about the theoretical of trading Arrieta, I'm wondering, Ryan, what you thought they would do if they did to, add another arm, and also Lester's obviously still got a lot of mojo, but he is older, and Lackey's clearly, they're not going to.
Is that like a Fangraphs statistic, the mojo? Yeah. I haven't seen that on the leaderboards.
Yeah. You just have to really dive down deep to get it.
Oh, it's on the advanced tab.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Right. Yeah.
And before you answer, Ryan, because I know the article you wrote on perhaps trading Arrieta has some of the nuance to it, but let me color it also with, let's not forget that the 2016 Cubs rotation was incredibly healthy, and they were incredibly lucky to be so healthy, in my opinion. So the fact that if we, the Cubs let go of Jason Hamill and to say, oh, well, there's Montgomery, done, is one way to look at it, but that they're going to have at least two or three potential starters in the mix for this, because people will get hurt. Innings will need to come from somewhere. And so if you get rid of Hamill and you bring in Montgomery, you still need to bring in more guys. And if you trade Arrieta, now you got to bring in even more arms. So go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah. And I think touching back on the Hamill topic, what was it? $10 or $12 million. For the production that he gives you as a fifth starter, I think you can pretty easily replicate that with a guy like Montgomery for a lot less money. And really, I just look at it as, if I'm any team, do I really want to pay $10 or $12 million for my fifth starter? If Jason Hamill on the 2016 Cubs were replaced by your run-of-the-mill replacement-level AAA pitcher, how many wins do the Cubs get? Instead of 103, it's more like 99, 100. So, I mean, I think that's just a smart move. Moving forward on Arrieta, kind of the conclusion that I came to was the only way the Cubs could trade him is if they're moving him in a deal where they get back a pitcher that can step right into the rotation. And I kind of, it's not the most fair comparison, but there really weren't many equal comparisons. But what I put down was the Johnny Cueto trade from Cincinnati to Kansas City. Now, that was a midseason trade, so they had less amount of time with Cueto. But Cueto, I think, at this point, based on some of the issues with Arrieta in the second half last year, was a better pitcher at that moment. So I looked at that, and the Reds got back a top 50 pitching prospect and another top 100 pitching prospect, as well as another kind of high risk, high reward pitcher. One of those guys was Brandon Finnegan, who basically stepped right into the Reds rotation this year and did a pretty decent job. So that's the kind of return that it would require for the Cubs to consider moving Arrieta, getting a pretty good pitcher back who has some control and some ceiling and maybe a low salary, and a guy who could step in and work for you right now. I don't know if the Cubs could get that based on Arrieta's kind of up in the air performance. I put down some numbers, you know, for his first 15 starts versus his last 16 starts. And I mean, we all saw it in the playoffs. The guy couldn't go through a lineup the third time. I mean, he just, you know, he could look dominating in 1 minute, and then in another minute, his pitches could be moving all over the place. So
it's probably going to be the toughest move that Epstein has to make in the coming couple years, is what to do with him, if you commit or if you let go.
And see, that's the thing I kind of put in my article, is I think it's probably an 80 to 90% chance he's not back after 2017.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree totally.
Yeah, but I think because of his performance in the second half of 2016, it's so difficult to trade him. They should absolutely be listening on anyone who's calling, but to get the kind of value that it would justify moving him and be able to still contend in 2017, I just don't see it happening. So I think the most likely scenario is they play it out, see how he performs in 2017, and then take their compensation pick at the end of the year. Or worst case scenario, if he's pitching well, but for some reason the Cubs just aren't in the playoff race, or they think that they have something better on the hot stove, maybe they trade him in midseason. I mean, we've seen the Cubs do that, or not the Cubs, but we've seen Theo Epstein, you know, sack up and make that move, right, with Nomar Garcia Parra. So,
well, let's be honest, this doesn't happen. I mean, it makes it a lot easier to say that sentence, oh, let him go after the 2017 season, thanks to Kyle Hendricks and the performance he had this year. Without that, you probably stress a lot more about, oh, we got to get him back, but we don't want to make the financial commitment. It becomes a lot harder to just say, okay, fine, walk.
Let me ask you guys, what kind of commitment, now, obviously we don't know what he's going to do in 2017, but let's say that he has a season somewhere in between 2014 and 2016, where he's good, not 2015 Arrieta. How much money are you willing to give a 32-year-old Jake Arrieta at that point, if he wants, let's say, 6 years?
I just don't see them doing that. I mean, unless he he's made it clear he's not going to give them any sort of hometown discount. Scott Boras is his agent. I just don't see him taking anything remotely near what the Cubs would want to give him. So I think that he's gone after next season one way or the other, and probably because he plays it out and then they let him go.
I'm with you, Joel. The only scenario where I can see the Cubs committing to him, if he goes out 2017 and has a second half 2015 Arrieta season, and even then, now it becomes so much more expensive to keep him. But unless he shows that he is that guy and might be that guy for another 4 years, a la, you know, I mean, look at the history John Lester had to compile in his career for the Cubs to give him the contract they gave him. As I'm saying it, I just don't see it happening either way.
Yeah, even if he has a 2015 Jake Arrieta season next year, he probably is asking for a $200 million contract.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't see any scenario. There's no way he could be – there's no height he could reach that would be good enough to say, all right, let's sink this money into this guy. We absolutely have to have him back. I think that, you know, Epstein let Pedro Martinez walk one day, you know, after winning a World Series. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I just don't see any way that it's in the Cubs' best interest of bringing him back.
So we're talking about pitching. Let's move over to Aroldis Chapman. I tweeted it was a screenshot of a positive, very positive report. I think it was the prospect hot sheet over at Baseball America on the Arizona Fall League about how well Gleyber Torres is hitting the ball. And I just tweeted that and I said, ugh. And a lot of people responded to that. There was a lot of, hey, you know, kind of, don't complain. You won the World Series. It was a good trade. And it was a good trade.
Both sides,
yeah. It was a good trade. Yeah, I totally see it. And I think a lot of the issue with, you gave up that guy who, you know, is a prospects are always so much better than they end up being, right? Like you envision them as being the next Mike Trout and they never are. And then Chapman's issues around him and the domestic violence kind of, you know, you traded for that guy. But all that aside, Chapman's gone. You need to find a closer. So there's some names out there, Kenley Jansen, there's, Melanson. Curious to hear who you guys think the Cubs might target. They've spoken repeatedly about possibly finding that guy that isn't an established closer yet, but could get to that point. And in my opinion, Carl Edwards is probably in the mix, and simply for this reason. Rondon was the closer, and he was very good. And granted, he had some health issues and it wasn't all the way back, but Edwards has Maddon's trust. If he wouldn't have run into issues there in the last inning, he would have been the guy that was on the mound when the Cubs won the World Series instead of Montgomery. So it was Carl Edwards. So he looked really good this season. It was his first kind of full season in the big leagues. So he's got the stuff. I don't think they're going to try him back in the starting rotation, but curious to hear what you guys think should be done. Obviously there's a hole here. Now that Chapman's gone, they went big when they acquired him. They got, you know, one of the best closers out there, the cartoon fastball at 103, 104 miles an hour. Who's next?
Joel, take that one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, clearly, I think it's kind of down between what you said. I think it could be Edwards. I don't know that they trust him, and I feel like they're kind of in the same position with Edwards that they are with Albert Almora Jr., which is, you know, he's put in his time, and is he ready to take the step, or are you getting someone to supplant him and keep him on the sidelines for another couple of years? I think it's, you know, Edwards gives you a really nice option out of the bullpen in the middle innings, but, you know, maybe he is a really good closer and you've got him for pretty cheap. So my gut, I just have a feeling. I know that I've heard that they're looking at Jansen. They're meeting with him. I feel like they might end up with him. You know, I know that they probably don't want to spend a lot of money on a closer, and they would have to with him. But, you know, I don't know. It's just a hunch. That's my feeling that's the way they're going to go.
Yeah, I don't know if they go spend a whole lot of money on a big name reliever like Jansen or Melanson. I definitely don't think that Chapman will be back. Apparently he wants $100 million.
Yeah, I don't see him back.
That I would assume that Jansen probably wants similar money. So yeah, I don't know. I just don't, I don't love spending that kind of money on relievers. You know, reliever arms are so volatile. And some are really great. I mean, Jansen and Chapman both have been really, really, really great at what they do for more than just a couple of years. And they haven't had that kind of up and down reliever performance where some years they have a 5 ERA and some years they have a 1 ERA. they haven't fallen into that. So you know what you're getting with those guys, but I don't, that the bullpen was pretty good when Rondon was healthy and Strope was healthy. I mean, the Rondon and Strope that we remember from April, May, June, and July.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, take those two guys and, you know, add in Carl Edwards Jr. and, you know, Travis Wood as the loogie and Justin Grimm when he's, you know, his up and down that he always does. And then maybe grab a few scrap heap guys like Trevor Cahill of the past. And, you know, that's kind of how they patch their bullpen together, right? They acquire like 100 guys who you don't know who might be high ceiling, might have a good year. And then you see what you have and you patch your bullpen together. And I think that, you know, pairing with those guys who are good, they've done a good job of doing that. And if they feel like they need to go get a closer at the trade deadline, we've seen that they obviously are willing to do that. So you think they're bringing
Travis Wood back?
Either him or somebody else to get left-handed batters out. It depends on how much money Travis Wood wants, I would guess.
You know, but Carl Edwards, his numbers, I mean, you know, a little high on the walks, but not terrible. The strikeouts are fantastic, 13 strikeouts per nine, but 15 hits in 36 innings is really outstanding, and it's a testament to his stuff, really, that he's that unhittable. And obviously the Cubs defense is really good, but for a 24-year-old kid making his, for the most part, debut in the major leagues, that's pretty good. That's pretty encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be heartbroken if they gave him the ball and said, you're our closer. I mean, I think he's got the stuff, and I think he's –
Is it weird if Rondon doesn't get it because he was the guy last year?
I think it probably is weird, yeah. I think if Rondon is not the closer going into next year, they either sign somebody like Jansen or they are knowing something about Rondon that we don't. Because he never did look the same after the injury, but it wasn't like a big loss of velocity, right? It was like he still was hitting 97 by the end of the season, but it was that slider just wasn't – it looked like he just didn't have the slider anymore. Right. But I would assume he'd be able to figure that out. So, yeah, I think going into next year, Rondon's healthy and he's right. Naming anybody but Rondon as the closer is kind of – a slap in the face to that guy.
And Joel, I interrupted you, so go ahead.
I don't know what they're going to do with Rondon, but I just feel like, I mean, maybe he just needs some time to rehabilitate and they'll keep it, you know, status quo with him and Strope and Edwards as your closer in waiting. But I'm looking at his contract here, and Rondon is he's not on the books for next year. So, I don't know. I like Edwards' stuff. It's pretty electric. You know, you gave some of his numbers there, and I'm very interested to see what they're going to do with him in the future. But I think clearly he's going to be a key part of the bullpen on some level.
But yeah, I think another point that we should make is we're using the word closer as if we're just assigning, like, well, the best pitcher needs to be your ninth inning guy. But I think that baseball and our own consciousness and Joe Maddon have all evolved beyond the idea that, oh, well, he's the best pitcher, so make him the closer. I think Edwards, if he's your guy who you think can come in and strike out 13 batters per nine and be that electric arm, he's probably better in the seventh, eighth inning, sixth inning kind of role, right? Like, Rondon can come in and shut down the ninth. We've seen that. But, you know, maybe Edwards is the guy that you want who's got that electric arm that you want to come in, you know, if it's the seventh inning and the 3, 4, 5 hitters are coming up, you want him in that inning. Or maybe if it's the 7, 8, 9 hitters, you put Strope in the seventh and then bring Edwards in for the eighth for the tough batters. So I think there's a lot going on there now that, you know, hasn't fully reached, you know, the peak where people are really talking about it. But I think bullpens are being used a little differently in modern baseball than they were maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be fine with 7, 8, 9 going Edwards, Strope, Rondon. We'll see, right? The Indians got to the World Series using their best reliever in a different way. Is this something that people are going to do? We'll see what happens. I think most teams are just going to revert back to what they've been doing. But Joel brought up Almora, and you know, we have some he's been talked about a little bit in the news. Dexter Fowler probably not coming back again. That would be too good to be not too good to be true. Too incredible for this to happen two seasons in a row. Fowler's probably going to get the contract he wanted last year. That being said, it seems to be a clear time to transition to Almora as a center fielder at least. But then you have to come up with a leadoff hitter. I know Ryan, you wanted to kind of talk a little bit about some of the stuff that Epstein said about Almora recently.
Yeah, apparently, and this is just something I had heard. I haven't seen it directly, but I had heard that Theo had said, or somebody had said at the GM meetings, that they didn't think Almora was ready for every day in the outfield just to hand him over a starting spot, and that the Cubs would look to acquire somebody if Fowler leaves. That is something I had heard today, and I hadn't had time to go, pawing through all the lists of, center fielders on the free agent market or potential trades. So I don't really have anybody in mind specifically, but I did think that was interesting. I don't necessarily disagree about not just handing the spot to Almora, but that really puts the Cubs' 2017 outfield in a lot of flux. You probably have Schwarber in left most days and Hayward in right most days, unless he's in center and you sign a right fielder. I don't know what to think about the 2017 outfield at this point.
Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah. I mean, I don't either.
I hear you breathing.
I tend to think, and this is just a hunch, I feel like there's a decent chance they'd bring Fowler back. I know it's possible that I've heard the Giants, I've heard the Cardinals are going to throw a lot of money at him, and which, maybe the Cubs don't want to just go crazy 4 years, whatever million. They were a really different team when he was not when he was injured. And I think they've got to know that. And, a guy who plays respectable defense, who can get on base, who can steal a base, who can hit home runs. Obviously, look what he did in the first, leading off game 7 against the Indians. That's really valuable. And the chemistry obviously is a huge plus. I think that I would not be shocked at all if they brought him back. And I think Almora, I know some people are really confident in him. I'm obviously confident in his defense and, like we talked about his base running there in game 7, but the bat is a question mark and he's never going to be an on base guy. So I think given that choice, if they can find the money, I feel like we might well see Fowler back next year.
That would be interesting. And the whole point of, I think when I read, I didn't read it as Almora's not ready to play everyday center field, although that might have been the quote. The way I read it was, we're not going to just give it to him. That wouldn't be prudent. And I think it makes sense with this team. I mean, you're losing David Ross. You're going to lose Dexter Fowler, probably, maybe not. That veteran leadership is you need to find some way to get that back somewhere. Whether that I'm looking at the center field free agents now, Rajai Davis is on there, which would be like for an interesting turn there.
That's funny.
But I think it does feel, it feels like it makes sense. And it was good that Almora got to be up there with Fowler, during some of the time this season to kind of get a sense, get to experience a true major league center fielder. That's very good. So it'll be interesting to see what they do, but I'm expecting some veteran, not old, not super old, not like older than 35, 36, but some established center fielder that they can semi platoon with Almora to kind of give him kind of a nice on-ramp to being the everyday center fielder in 2018, I think.
Yeah. I think that's probably, I only saw somebody's take on the quote. I didn't read the Theo quote, so you're probably right. I don't know. I don't know what to think about center field and the Cubs outfield. I could totally see the Cubs, going and signing Fowler. They've been kind of quiet on that front, haven't they? Mm-hmm. So you just don't know. That might be their plan all along, is to to, you know, give Fowler a contract and bring him back. He has been a very important part to the team. So
how would you guys feel about a platoon of Jorge Soler plays right field a lot of the time when he's out, which is going to be significantly to save him or whether he gets hurt or not. Then Hayward slides over to right and Almora plays center. And for the most part, Schwarber's in left. Offensively, it sounds like it might work, but
that defense, your outfield defense has just taken a huge step down. Personally, I don't know that Soler is back. I know he's pretty cheap, and you know we've all rhapsodized. Well, everyone except for Isaac has rhapsodized about his potential. I guess Isaac is looking fairly Nostradamus-like there. But the outfield is too crowded with, you know, if you look at all the people who can play there, Zobrist and Schwarber and Hayward and, you know, whoever's in center, maybe that's Hayward. Bryant, maybe. I don't see – and it's funny because I've seen interviews with Theo where he's talked about Almora and he's gushed about him. Mm-hmm. He talked about Baez and he's gushed about him. He talked about Schwarber and he's gone on and on. Very much less so about Soler. And he said basically what I'm saying now, which is that the potential is there. And he said something like, you know, we'd love to see him put that together with the Cubs if possible.
Hmm.
So it was a very, very big caveat. So it just makes me feel like they're kind of like that they would look to deal him. The outfield's so crowded without him. I just feel like he's probably not going to be around.
Well, I don't know if you guys have anything else. I think one parting shot from me, if you guys have something you can add it, but the more I think about how 2017 is shaping up and Montgomery being a rotation possibility, more likely than not, he's going to be the guy. The more I look back at that trade, what a phenomenal trade. I mean, it's just, you took a guy who was never going to play for you, who had talent, but was never going to play for your major league team. And you turned him into potentially your, you know, a guy who's going to start 32 ball games in 2017 and close out the World Series in Game 7. Just a great job getting that guy and targeting him.
Yeah, and did you see what the Mariners just did with Paul Blackburn, who was also in that deal? They moved him to Oakland for Danny Valencia. So who knows how long Valencia or Vogelbach will be in Seattle, but it's possible that their 2017 first base and third base, their two corner infielders, could be acquired for Mike Montgomery. So that's a classic win-win, I think, for both teams.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, if you guys don't have anything, I'm going to remind users to send us questions on Twitter. We're at BP WrigleyCast. The email is bpwrigleycast@baseballprospectus.com. The videos that we talked about, our favorite moments from the postseason, are going to be in the show notes, so you can get to those there. And also, since we won't talk probably for another week, the Rule 5 draft, which is one of my favorite, maybe not favorite, but one of my more obscure favorite parts of the Major League season, is on Friday. And you can read Tommy Meyer's piece on BP Wrigleyville on some of the players that the Cubs may or may not protect. I think he wrote that yesterday. It's pretty good, so take a look at that. Other than that, I think we're done for the night.
Sounds good.
Cool. Thanks.
It was a pleasure to be back with you guys after our 2-week hiatus that felt like 2 months.
Yeah, I can't wait to get back into being angry about off-season and all the things we get angsty about.
About Madden putting Chapman in Game 6.
I hope to never have to think about that ever again.
I'm going to have to get so positive for the next round of podcasts so that Joel can just pull me down.
Yeah. Get all that stuff ready.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Good night.